Good morning. My name is Steve, and I'm an alcoholic. If you don't mind, we'd like to start off with a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Again, I'd like to welcome you all, and at this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, from Colorado, Jennifer A.
My name's Jen Ashby. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a little nervous. My sobriety date is February 8, 1988, and my home group is Parker Thursday Night in Parker, Colorado, 8 p.m. Thursday night. So if you're ever in Colorado, come visit us. We'd love to have you. Seems like a pretty easy topic, really. You know, if you've been sober for a while, or if you've, you know, just walking into the room, I mean, step 12 is what makes this program what it is, you know. It's how we all get sober and how we all stay sober, in my opinion. And, you know, I owe a huge debt to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll never be able to repay that debt. And the things that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous and the service commitments that I have and the work I do with other alcoholics is, you know, it's a wonderful thing, and but it'll never end. You know, I'm very adamant about service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and from the day that I got here, and I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 14 years old, and from the very beginning, I was told that you put away chairs and you empty ashtrays and you do, you know, whatever it is that you need to do to help this thing continue. And from that very beginning, you know, I'm so thankful that I had that beginning, and I'm so thankful that I had the desperation that I had, that I was willing to do whatever it was that people told me to do. And I was absolutely desperate for a different way to live. And I had no idea, you know, that alcohol was even my problem. It was my solution for my entire life. And I couldn't imagine life with or without alcohol. But walking into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and meeting with the people who were armed with facts about themselves, who could tell me a little bit about what it was to be an alcoholic and relate their stories to me, and I could relate my story with them, one day at a time, you know, I was able to understand what this thing was about and get a sponsor and work through the steps and have a spiritual experience, you know, and that is what this program is about. Still today, that's what this program is about, and I'm very, I have to be accountable to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I do that through step 12, you know, through service work and Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's something that I didn't know how to do when I got here, certainly. Coming from where I came from, it was all about me, and it was all about what I could get and when I could get it, and, you know, if it wasn't fitting in with my lifestyle, then I would just run away, you know, and if I didn't like you, and I didn't like what you said, or I didn't like, you know, that you weren't giving me what I wanted, then I would just walk away, and that's how I ran my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me a new way to live, and I never imagined that I would be standing here sober 22 years later, because I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to get sober. I wanted a different way to live, and you know, it just happened that this is where I belonged. You know, I am an alcoholic. I started drinking very young. I was in drug counseling when I was 5 years old, so had an interesting life. you know, I was one of those that was alcoholic from day one. You know, I don't remember my first drink, but I remember that obsession and compulsion was there from day one. You know, and I would get on the bus to go to kindergarten, and I would obsess about when I was gonna get home so that I could drink. You know, and that's what my life looked like. And so it was hard and fast, and I didn't pay attention to what anybody told me. And, you know, I went to drug counselors, and I had friends that would tell me that I shouldn't drink, and I lost my first boyfriend in fifth grade because I drank too much. That's what my life looked like. You know, I'm not going to go into, you know, a lot of dramatic life things that happened, but from, you know, you can just imagine from a very young age, that's what my life was, you know, and it just revolved around alcohol. And if you're sitting in this room and you're an alcoholic, you understand what I'm talking about. So when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I understood what those people talked about, and that's what makes this thing happen, is that one-on-one relationship that we can have with another alcoholic, you know, those conversations that we can have that we just can't have anywhere else. You know, like I said, a lot of people told me that maybe I should take a look at my drinking, but that was my solution. And I didn't understand that until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so for somebody to reach their hand out and talk to me and help me understand what it was to be an alcoholic and talk to me about what it was that I needed to do if I wanted to stay sober. Like I said, I didn't want to stay sober, but I was done living the way that I was living. I was absolutely insane, and I just wanted to die. You know, and I saw that there were people in the rooms that wanted to live, and beyond that, they had lives worth living, and I just didn't have that. And I've been able to get that in Alcoholics Anonymous through the process called the 12 Steps, you know. And I was very fortunate that I was able to get a sponsor pretty early in sobriety. I mean, my first 6 months, I, you know, people say, you know, find somebody you like what they have. Well, what I liked and what was probably good for me were two very different things. So my first sponsor, I think she was like 30 days sober. And I called her, and she had went back out and got drunk. So I don't that didn't work out very well or for very long. You know, but about 6 months into sobriety, I found a woman who was willing and able to walk through this process with me. And you know, I thank God for that woman, you know, and that she was able to do those things. And I was a mess, you know. I didn't know how to get up and do the things that a 14-year-old needed to do on a daily basis. And I would call her in the morning, and she would say, take a shower and call me when you're done. And I would call her when I was done. She'd say, okay, put on your makeup and go to school. You know, like, I didn't know how to do those things. I just absolutely did not know how to do those things. And so there were the basic things of like trying to live life like normal people, you know, seem to know how to do. And I certainly didn't know how to do it. Certainly did not know how to do it without drinking. And she was able to walk me through those things. And she was able to spend a lot of time with me, take me to a lot of meetings, and work through the steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, if you're new in this program or if you're old in this program, I hope that you have somebody in your life that is able to take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as written in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that is where our solution lies. And that has been my experience, you know. There's been lots of things that have happened over the years for me. I certainly am not the poster child of Alcoholics Anonymous, but what I do know is that today it is so important for me to stay accountable in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's more important today at 22 years sober to be accountable in Alcoholics Anonymous than it was really when I first got here, because I was so desperate when I first got here, and the drinking was, and that life was so close in my memory that, you know, it's sometimes easy to forget. As we get lives in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's easy to forget where we came from. And I can't forget, because I don't think I have another drunk in me. I just really don't believe that. I don't believe that in my soul. I don't think that I would have lasted another few years had I not found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that I'm just a drink away from a drunk. And so, you know, absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous and everything that it's done for me. And it's been a wonderful journey. It really has. And so today, you know, I have girls that I sponsor, and they come over to my house every week, and we go through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous page by page, line by line. I have a sponsor, and I meet with her on a regular basis. I have a home group that I attend weekly, and I also have service commitments within our area. You know, this last few years, I'm the state convention chair for Colorado, and it's coming up in September. Yay! So if you're in Colorado, Labor Day weekend, we are having a convention, and pretty excited about that. And it's been a wonderful experience to serve as a chair of that committee, and you know, everything that goes along with that, you know, and being accountable. Like I said before, I wasn't accountable to anything before I got here, and Alcoholics Anonymous has given me all these things to give me purpose, you know, in my life. And I just didn't have that. And for us, I think that it's important to be in the middle of this thing. And it's definitely been important for me to be in the middle of this thing and do what I can to show up and to try to give back, you know, what was given to me, you know, and has always been given to me. I have people that I can call anywhere, anytime, around the country, really, and they would show up for me, you know, and that's just a wonderful thing, because I don't think anybody would have showed up for me when I first got here, and I certainly wouldn't show up for anybody else when I first got here. But today, I know how to answer the phone when it rings. I know how to show up and meet with somebody when they need to meet with me. And it's not always convenient, but it's what I have to do in order to stay sober. I'm just one drink away from that drunk, and I don't want to live that way. You know, if I could be the person that I wanted to be and drink, then that would be me today, but I can't. And so that I have to do these things, and I have to take the action, and I have to show up. And I encourage anybody in this room who wants this thing and who wants to stay sober, who sees something here, to also continue to show up, you know, and help that new person who's walking through the rooms, or help that person who's 15 years sober and dying walking into the rooms. You know, this is a we program. It's not all about me program, although sometimes I get back there. But for the most part, you know, I really ask God for guidance on a daily basis. What can I do today to be helpful? You know, how can I be of maximum service to you and to my fellows? And really ask God to direct me and direct my thinking. And that's just not something that comes naturally. I don't think it comes naturally for us to do that. But it is something that I do on a daily basis today, because I have to. My life depends on this thing. And what an honor to be asked to share a little bit about my experience at the International Convention. It's, you know, this is my fourth international. I missed Toronto, but I was in Seattle, San Diego, Minneapolis, and I'm here now. And what a wonderful experience. And if this is a new experience for you, if this is your first time at an international, I hope you just enjoy it as much as I enjoy these, and seeing all the people in all the different countries that are represented because of two people who sat down together and shared their experience with one another. And that's what we continue to do each day, because that is what it's about. And so 75 years later, we get to stay here and be sober. And that in itself is just such a miracle. And so definitely an honor to be able to speak a little bit of my experience here. And, you know, when I was asked to do this, I was thinking maybe 100 people. And then I had a girlfriend say, well, you can look at how much room capacity there is in the room you're speaking. And I'm thinking, I don't know that I want to do that. And so I looked at that the other night. It was like 2 days ago. And it was like, this room capacity is like 2,000 people. I'm like, really? So I'm amazed I haven't fallen down, because I'm not really used to speaking in front of this many people. In fact, I've never spoken in front of this many people. But, you know, that being said, I do have experience, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been sober for a while, and I just love this program and what it's given me. I have a wonderful life today. I'm married to somebody who's also in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That helps me keep pretty accountable, too. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholics are all around me on a daily basis, and that is so important, you know, to have those phone calls. I don't think a day goes by when I'm not talking to another alcoholic, you know, even outside me and my husband. It's just, they're always around, you know, and yeah, it's a good thing though, you know. I love the way that we relate to each other, you know. We are people who would normally not mix, but we have that common bond, you know, something that you can't find anywhere else. And just the last day since we've been here, you know, just having conversations with people from all over and just starting conversations with them and, you know, not knowing them. And it's just a wonderful thing how we can relate and bond, and we have that common purpose and that commonality, you know, that this program has given us, and just really an amazing thing. I am so grateful for everything and everybody, and everybody in this room. You know, we are miracles. To be here one day sober, you know, is a miracle for us, because that wasn't who I was, and that wasn't who any of us were before we got here, I'm pretty sure. I just couldn't get there, and this program has given me a way to stay there, stay sober, and have a wonderful life, really. So with that, I'm going to shut up. I don't know how much time I've used, but I'm done. Thank you.
And again, my name is Steve. I'm an alcoholic, and like Jennifer, it's amazing to look out at 2,000 alcoholics, and I'm just struck by the power of the program and the "I can't, but we can" motto. And in this room, you know, I got sober at the Valley Alano Club in downtown Rancho Cucamonga. And some would call it the sobriety capital of the world, but it's basically a Quonset hut, and it was about 100 degrees and smoky, and I remember they had a disco ball hanging down with shell fly strips attached to it. If it got really bad at lunchtime, they turned the disco ball on and tried to catch the flies just by sticking to them. So as we come celebrate 75 years of AA, I realized how far we've come and how far I've come in my meetings. With that, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Ray from Illinois. Please come in.
I'm not Ray from Illinois.
That's what it says.
I guess I'm going to be Ray from Illinois today. But thank you, Steve. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jimmy D. That's good, because that'll get me feeling much more comfortable. thanks, Jen. Thanks for sharing. That was awesome. I'm currently from Sandy Hook, Connecticut, but I'm a little nervous because I'm not back in the Bronx where it's safe. You should be up here looking out there. This is pretty cool. So I want to thank the General Service Office staff for inviting me to come and participate, because it's pretty cool to participate in any AA event, but to be at the 75th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Antonio, Texas, and being a drunk from the Bronx, this is pretty cool. I know there are CPC committees, right? So that we cooperate with the professional community and doctors. We work with doctors. And I was at a rehab facility, and this doctor came up to me and said, "I know how to deal with alcoholics professionally, but how do you guys do it in AA? How do you tell the difference between a social drinker, a problem drinker, and an alcoholic?" So I said, "Well, come with me," and I took him to the nearest bar, and I looked around for a while, and I pointed out three guys. I said, "Distract those guys for a minute," and I put a fly in each one of their drinks, and I told him to come back over and just observe. So the first guy looked in his drink, and he sees a fly in his drink. He calls the bartender over and says, "Excuse me, could I have another drink?" He gives him another drink, and I tell the doctor, that's the social drinker. The next guy looks in his drink. He sees the fly in his drink. He flicks it out with the stirrer, and he drinks it down. I tell the doctor, that's the problem drinker. Third guy looks in the drink, picks up the fly by the wings, and says, "Spit it out, you bastard." And when Steve opened the meeting, I really enjoyed the way he opened the meeting, because he said, you know, let's have a moment of silence, and everybody started clapping and going, "Yee-hee!" We just can't take direction, man. which is why I am very grateful to be a member of AA, because this is the first place in my life where I really fit in. And I've had the privilege to, you know, serve the fellowship in different ways along the way. Like I said, I sober in the Bronx. I'm from a long line of alcoholics, and, you know, I really wasn't planning on joining AA when I was growing up. But anyway, I learned about the 12 step through my sponsor. I got sober in the Never Too Young group in the Bronx. February 12th, 1982 is my sobriety date. It took me twice as much time as Jennifer to get into AA, which is really cool because I got involved with the International Conference of Young People in AA. In 1982, it came to New York City, and it kind of helped change my life in addition to my home group and my sponsor and doing service. Because I found out that my life wasn't over, which is what I thought when I knew I had to stop drinking. My second marriage was going down the tubes. Things weren't going too well. And I knew I had to stop drinking at that point. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I really sincerely thought that I would never have another fun, happy day as long as I lived. And as you all know, that was an incorrect thought. So I started the journey in my home group and continued doing everything they asked me to do. Well, first of all, I didn't do it the way you suggested for a year. I actually came to AA February 20th, 1981, but it took me a year and a slip and doing everything my way to figure out that it's better to do it the way it's suggested in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did everything Mike told me to do, and you know, we actually did a lot of that old-fashioned picking up drunks and taking them to hospitals and, you know, waiting in emergency rooms, and you know, I got a good dose of how this thing works. I got involved in committees, and I had more fun than you could possibly believe in the last 28 years. I've been in AA half my life. I've met some of the most incredible people in the world. Different accents, same message, no matter where I go. I became a GSR because I had a resentment. They were talking about, you know, drugs and alcohol and primary purpose and singleness of purpose. And, you know, I figured I was here to straighten out AA. And I go to this meeting, and there was a guy who was a past delegate and a trustee for Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was a little Irishman with an accent or a brogue. And I just pinned him as the enemy. You know, I was like, I'm going to have a debate with this guy. I have a union background, so I was like a professional arguer. And it turns out that Jimmy S. was a trustee, and I learned an awful lot from that man. And I had a lot of other mentors who taught me a lot, and I started learning that you need to have an open mind in this place. And, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I've tried to carry this message to other alcoholics, which is not that hard for me. I kind of love doing that. Most of us, I think, do. But practicing these principles in all my affairs, that's a whole nother story. That's not so hard to do when I'm hanging out with you guys and we're at meetings. But then when you go to work, and then when you're hanging out with your family, it's a little tougher. But a day at a time, you know, I'm glad we say progress, not perfection. I hooked up with a bunch of young people in the Bronx, and we started the Bridge Over Troubled Waters Conference of Young People in AA. And for about 19 years, we went around and we tried to carry the message to alcoholics, all alcoholics, not just young ones. But it was like such a gas, man. We had so much fun. And like sometimes I hear people talk about service like it sounds like it's a chore or something. And I got to tell you, man, it was never a chore for me. The people I hung out with, half of them are here, sitting up front, having to listen to Jimmy D talk again. There he goes again. Hear the same old stuff. But it's just an awesome experience. I, too, have gone to some international conventions over the years. I started in Montreal, and Lois Wilson was there, for those of you that were there and remember that. And this little tiny woman, 80 pounds, she was old. I forget how old she was at the time. And my wife was with me. And, you know, I'm a Bronx guy, the tough image. But, you know, it was the first time I remember crying in front of my wife when Lois got up to that mic and said how proud Bill would have been to see us in that stadium. It was incredible. Seattle, they actually asked me to speak at the Seattle convention. I was overwhelmed. I was just doing service. And then when you do service, people ask you to do stuff. So David A., He passed away. He was a past trustee. And he did two tapes on the concepts. We have 12 concepts, by the way. If you're having trouble sleeping at night, start reading them and you won't have to take any pills. So he had these two cassette tapes, 2 hours on the concepts, and he just broke it down into, you know, how they Bill took them from the steps and the tradition. They were awesome. I listened to them every morning in the bathroom, getting ready for work. And so I got to Seattle. I'm all nervous. I get up to the thing, and I said, I've been listening to this man for 2 hours. Oh, by the way, they asked me to speak, and I was on the panel with David. And I had never met him before. He was from Dallas. I was in awe of this guy. I loved him, but I never met him. And then I find out I'm on the panel with him out there. And so he's sitting there, and I get up, and I tell him, I've been listening to this man in my bathroom for the last 2 years. And he gets up to the mic, and he's from Dallas, Texas, a little dentist he was, and he goes, my name's David, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've never been in this man's bathroom in my life. But speaking of the 12th step, we went, John C's here, he's one of my closest friends in the world, and we went to Seattle looking forward to it. But the hotel we were staying in happened to have an AA meeting every morning. It was either 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. And John's up early all the time anyway. So we go to the meeting, and there's a woman sharing there that there was this young man who was in a terrible motorcycle accident. I can't remember. I'm getting old, man. It was a year. He was sober a year or two. And he was looking forward to going to the convention more than anything. And he was in this terrible accident with a tractor trailer. He lost his arm and his leg. And she said, he's in the hospital, and if you guys want to go up, they've been having meetings up there. And it turns out that they brought an active drunk into his room to roommate with him, and he 12-stepped the guy. After that horrible accident, waiting to go to the conference, and he gave him his registration and his badge, and he sent the guy to the conference in his place. Some guy came, we had a meeting, some guy brought a first edition of the big book, and we had a meeting in his room, and you know, I went to the convention in Seattle to have fun and have a great time, and I had that experience of watching the miracle of how this thing works. In a bed, just lost his arm and his leg, he 12-stepped the guy and fulfilled his primary purpose. It's amazing. I've had a wonderful journey in sobriety. It's been like unbelievably awesome, happy, joyous, and free most of the time. You know, things happen, tragedies. My sister's a paraplegic from a car accident. My other sister, you know, all alcoholism, you know, this disease just takes. But I still manage to be happy, joyous, and free through all of that because I hang out with you guys. And I've heard people go through much worse experiences and get through it and stay sober and work this program. But the last few years, things just started going, you know, haywire a bit for me in every category. I worked all my life to get I'm a Bronx frustrated cowboy to get a horse property, move to Connecticut. We use horses to help people, and you know, horses are gone, houses on the way out, retirement, you know, all these things happen. Then my son joins the military. He was a New York City cop, but he went over to Iraq. I was a wreck. Couldn't sleep. But I wasn't doing, I had a home group sponsor working the program, but I had lost my trust in my higher power, and I was a mess. So I did all the things we do. Meeting every day, but I was still kind of suffering. My daughter was having a hard time. She's sitting right there. She went into treatment, and she's here with us. She was the one at 95, but she. But those things are a little stressful, you know what I mean? And so I'm going through all this, and Terry F. is here. He's a past delegate from the Southeast New York area, and he's a good friend of mine. And I spoke in a lot of correctional facilities over the years, but I never got to speak in Sing Sing in New York. It's a pretty well-known correctional facility. And I always, like, tried to get there, and things didn't work out. So he's got the commitment. He said, do you want to speak in Sing Sing? And I said, of course, you know. And I go. And the first time we go, as usual, the paperwork was all done and everything, but it didn't get downstairs and I had to go home. My paperwork wasn't there. So I had to wait another month, go back, and I go in there, and I don't know, it was about 12 or 13 guys. I shared my story as quick as I could, and I told them that, you know, I started drinking when I was 12. You got me beat by a long shot there. Yeah. But about 8 or 9 of those guys had started when they were 12. And they were all there as a direct result of alcoholism. And the one guy was 19 years in prison, had to wait another 18 years for the possibility of parole. And he was 18 or 19 years sober. And he told me he was happy, joyous, and free in Ossining State Correctional Facility. May never get out. A lot of those guys are never getting out. So when Bill was in the Mayflower Hotel getting ready to drink after preaching to drunks for 5 months, that's when it worked. When he was desperate, all messed up in the head, business going down the tubes, he desperately goes and finds Bob, and then this thing takes off. I didn't go to that prison to go preach to guys in a correctional facility. Terry got me to go there because I desperately needed to be there to listen to those guys, and that's how this thing works. And thanks for letting me be here with you.
Steve, I'm an alcoholic. I'm kind of glad Ray didn't show up. Thanks, Jimmy. In regards to our topic, I live in California, and I bought a home, and I spent years fixing this home. It was a 100 years old, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was so grateful for it, and I just kept fixing it. And as a result, my favorite room is the living room, and I have an opportunity to work with my sponsees. I got my chair, they can either sit in the couch or the sponsee chair. I try to point them to that one. And on Saturday, June 11th of 2004, you can see I barely recall the incident. I was working with a sponsee, and he was doing a fifth step, and he was getting it. And I just listened. And at the end of the fifth step, I didn't say anything, and he didn't say anything for about a minute. And then I felt something, and I looked at him, and I said, "Did you feel that?" And he said, "Yeah, I felt that." And I believe with all my heart that God was in that room with us and that he allowed us to be part of his program, and that in no more clear evidence did I realize how valuable step 12 was and how much I received and the love that I can show another man by listening to his fifth step. And it was just a wonderful experience. Okay, I have checked, and our next speaker's name is Linda, and please help me in welcoming Linda. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Linda, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm privileged and honored to be here today. And this is, like everybody said, unbelievable. It's amazing how you can come up here and stand at this podium without a note in your hand, not an outline, you know, and speak on a topic that you may or may not have any knowledge of, but hopefully I do, or I can convince you that I do. I have 15 minutes to do that, and I'm going to try to do that. You know, before we came up, I know Jimmy as well, and I was really happy to see that he was on panel with me, because I really respect him. And I saw him put on his jacket. I was like, oh, he looks so professional, you know. And the only thing I could think of doing was changing my shoes. I was like, go change your shoes. You have to speak to these people. Anyway, I'm here. The 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, you know, and I did read it again. And I thought about the spiritual awakenings I've had over these last few years. My sobriety date is January 18th, 1991. And I do believe my very first spiritual awakening was when I accepted help for my alcoholism. Because I fought it through my job that it wasn't the alcohol. It was everything else, everybody else, one particular guy that I couldn't name. But the day that my EAT assistance person said to me, actually it was my boss that pointed her finger in my face like I was a little child, just like this, and says, "You are going at 3 o'clock to see the EAP, and you better do what he tells you to do." And all I could do was say, "Okay." And that was the first time I spoke up for myself, because I was having trouble a lot of years, you know. And I took the fifth on everything they talked about. I never admitted to nothing. I was not going to tell them I was an alcoholic. They had to tell me. And that day, the EAP finally said, "Let's talk about your alcoholism." He always started that way. And he would say, "How much do you drink?" I'd say, "A little bit." "What's a little bit?" "Maybe a half a pint." And if he could have seen the number of pints I drank and the number of liters of beer I drank in one night before I fell asleep, that's when I passed out, it was more than a half a pint. But that day when he says, "I tell you what we're going to do, I'm going to set you up in a nice place, I'm not going to send you to a dump, it's upstate, and it's called, I'm not going to give you the name, but a place for successful living." That sounded good. Yeah. So I agreed to go, and I got ready, of course, that weekend, because I was going that Monday. And I ended up at some place, it was like a dude ranch. But when I got there, you know, looking at the place and the name, and I was happy to be. I'm one of these alcoholics that was happy to get sober. I wanted to be sober. I wanted my life back, so I was glad that I was going. The day that I said okay was the day the weight just lifted off my shoulders, because I was going to get some help, and help was what I wanted. I just didn't know how to get it. So when I ended up there, you know, I was like the happy-go-lucky person, because I wasn't drinking anymore, and like Jenny said, they were telling me what to do, which I kind of got insulted a little bit. You know, like, you would get up in the morning, you would take a shower, you would comb your hair, you would brush your teeth. It's like, doesn't everybody know this? You know, and then it was after a while that I realized I needed to be told again, you know. So I fell in and did what I was, took the suggestions. I started taking suggestions right away. I did what I was told. And I was so glad to be getting sober. I don't even remember when the obsession was lifted, but I know that I was getting up and I was doing what I was told to do, and I was going to bed and didn't have to have a drink, then wasn't looking for the liquor store. I had forgotten about the drink. The obsession had been lifted. And when I came back out of there, I'm going to speed fast forward, and was told by my counselor that I should make AA meetings, I should make CA meetings, I should make NA meetings, and I needed to do that like right away. So I had the book, and I remember I live off of Flatbush Avenue, and I found a meeting in the book said Flatbush Dorchester. So I knew it had to be on Flatbush Avenue, and I really didn't know what I was doing, but I got on the bus and showed the book to the driver. How do I get there? Because I took a cab everywhere I went, and I needed to get there fast and get back fast. I didn't know anything about the buses. But I got on the bus, and he says, "Oh, okay, you just get off down here, and you walk 2 blocks over." And I did that and found my very first meeting. And talk about love in action. This is where I remember the first person that showed me love in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I walked into that beginner's meeting at the break, I did what my counselor told me to do. She said, "Raise your hand and say, your name is Linda, you just got out of rehab." And that's exactly what I did. And people started to clap. I started to cry. But I was happy. I was happy. And the girl next to me gave me her meeting book and says, you know, my meeting book says, "Write my number on it. And we have another meeting after this," you know. And I looked at her and I said, "But are you staying?" You know, she was like, And she hadn't planned to, but she did. And that's where I experienced my first moments of love in action, because she stayed with me. She walked with me to the next meeting in the next room. They had a temporary sponsorship list. And I said, "Well, is anybody here?" You know, she says, "Well, after the meeting, I'll introduce you to the lady in the kitchen who was, you know, cleaning up afterward." And that's where I met my first sponsor. She told me to write down her number, call her the next day. And I said, "Okay." And the next day, I did what she was told. I followed suggestions in the beginning, and I believe that's what started me on my way. So the next night I called her and I told her, oh, I went to a meeting, blah, blah, blah. She said, did you drink today? I said, no. She says, how you feeling? I said, great. She says, call me tomorrow. And she did that every time I called her. Call me tomorrow. I called that lady for the next 5 years every day. Every day. No lie. Every day. And finally her husband says, you know, we can set our clocks by your call because it was 10 o'clock every night. You know, but that's how it worked for me. It was like the wheels of AA started to turn. The love was there. You know, this young lady, she didn't have to do that. And ever since then, when I go to my home group, and I look around in my home group, if your home group is like mine and you make meetings there, you participate in it, you know when a new person comes in the room. And I can spot them as soon as they walk through the door, and they sit there just like I was, scared, don't know what to do. And at the break, I just walk up and say, hi, you been here before? My name is Linda. And they say, no. I said, well, come with me. Let me show you where the kitchen is and get coffee with them to make them feel at ease. And that's the love, you know. That's the love that I show the newcomer, and I encourage my home group to do it too. And if it's a guy, I'll go to one of the men and say, that guy is new. I think you should talk to him. Go make him feel comfortable. And that's the way this fellowship works, helping another sick and suffering alcoholic. In the days of Bill W., they used to go to hospitals and doctors and get the wet drunk. We don't do that too much today, but we still can reach out for the new alcoholic. The new alcoholic is everywhere. And the others talk about service. Yeah, when you're in service, they give you stuff to do. And currently I am privileged to be the Public Information Committee Chair for my Area 49, southeastern New York. And they're here. And I love the service that I do. Every commitment I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, every service commitment, I fall in love with it because it's about helping somebody, reaching out to the other alcoholic. And with public information, you've got a different angle because there's somebody out there that knows somebody and can get our message to them. I think Bill Wilson also said that we don't want to be so anonymous people can't find us. We want that alcoholic out there to find us. So we have a lot of work to do because there are alcoholics out there that have never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, believe it or not. And so we have a job to do. And God, I believe my higher power, which I choose to call God, set me up for this too. Because like Jenny, I am not married. But in the 12 step, they say these single people kind of get into service and dive into it, and we're available to do the work. So I just keep right on working. Because that's what I do. And that job that sent me to that rehab, at the time I was 23 going on 24 years with that job. With the help of Alcoholics Anonymous, I retired from that job 4 years ago, and I am living a happy, joyous, and free life. That would not have happened. From 23 years to 39 years, I held on to that, and I am so grateful to my higher power. I was telling a friend out there before we started, the day I got my date, I just looked straight up and said, thank you, God, thank you, because I almost lost the whole thing. I was ready to give it up because when my manager said, Linda, it's your job, there was nothing I could say because I knew there was nothing I could do. And that's the way I felt. And the day that I finally got that finger pointed in my face and I took the suggestion and took more suggestions as I went forward, I am grateful to my higher power because this was set up for me. My life is not boring. I am very busy, and yet I am still happy, joyous, and free. So love in action can come in many different directions. Spirituality, and I've had so many spiritual awakenings along this journey. Like I said, the first one was when I accepted help. The second one was in rehab, and then they just kept coming. It's those events that you look around and you don't know how it happened, and you know you didn't do it, but it was all good. It was all good. And it's different for everybody, and there's no way to describe them. All I know is that somebody is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And today I am grateful, and I want to thank you for listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful convention.
Okay, we've come to the point of our meeting where we invite individual shares. It says here that there is a floor mic to allow members to share from the audience, but I don't know if that's accurate or not. But yeah, Ray's got it. In that case, I would ask those who would like to share, please come up to the podium and share with us your experience on step 12. Please.
Good morning. My name is Emmett. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Stephanie Baptist Church in Monroe, Connecticut, next door to this guy here. Never met him, but I'd like to thank the panel. I also live in Vero Beach, Florida. Snowbird, 6 months of the year. I have a group down there called the Early Risers at the Newport Club. I have a sponsor in both states. I have men I sponsor in both states. And I'm grateful to be here today and have such great speakers here. And my sobriety date is May 5th, 1986. My wife is here with me from Al-Anon, 24 years. Our Lady of Perpetual Revenge. And the first time I spoke for a few minutes about recovery and the rest about my alcoholic family. And then a short time later, when my ego came back and pride, I was asked to speak at a hearing impaired meeting for an hour and a half. And I spoke for an hour and 25 minutes. And the people were adjusting their hearing aids, and I thought they wanted to hear all the wisdom that I was going to bestow upon them in my first 6 months in the program. And I found out later they were turning their hearing aids off. And, you know, we all have to learn a lot of things about this program, you know. And I had to be taught a lot of things, you know. And thank God for the love and the service that these people are talking about that helped me get through one day at a time, you know, not drinking. And I remember my sponsor, I'll make this short, but at a beginner's meeting, it was my first meeting, and went out of town. I wasn't that bad of an alcoholic. Of course, I was drinking around the clock. And I have a brother named Bob, and so when they went around the room asking for their name and sobriety date, I said, my name is Bob, I'm an alcoholic. And needless to say, and in that room of men that I didn't know was one man from my hometown. And his name is Mike, and I hated him. And he was arrogant, he was a wise guy, he was an angry man. And he's still my sponsor today. And I like to say that God had a plan, you know. God always had a plan. It's taken many years to see that, but through inventories and help from people, I've learned that, you know, God has a plan. And I one more thing about egos and pride. On our ninth step that we do, I wanted to make an amends for someone that I could not do. And a shelter had gotten robbed, and I was going to donate some money, but I made sure I called the newspaper up to give them my name, my full name, where I live, and everything else. And I couldn't wait to get back to my sponsor to tell him what great things I'm doing. And I told him, and I can still remember this. This is a long time ago. He looked at me in the eyes, and he said, "Emmett, it doesn't count." He said, "The only time it counts is when God and you know about it, and that's all you need to do." And so I've learned that when I do service or I do things, I just say, "Thank you, God, that I can be able to do this, and no one else has to know but you." And for that, I'm eternally grateful. I'm grateful for this convention. I've made four already over the years. And I hope everybody has a great time. And thank you for letting me share.
Thanks so much.
I'm Ron. I'm an alcoholic. Howdy. My sobriety date is 21st of July, 1980. And the thing about this is we've got so many people to go on vacation with. No, I'm serious. And this journey all started back in 1981 when I went to my first sticky pot. And you just keep going. And you people, if you keep coming back, what these conventions will turn into is a reunion. You know? At first, when I got up here, I thought, do I really want to get up here? You know, do I really want to? But also, I asked God in step 6 to remove my defects of character and then to remove my shortcomings. If I don't come up here and walk through the fear, how in the heck am I supposed to know that they're being removed? You know? This is a spiritual experience, me coming up here and all these people. You know, it's awesome. You people just keep coming back. It's beyond your wildest dreams. And it's great. Just keep coming back. Bye. Thank you.
I'm Kenny. I'm an alcoholic. Hi to everybody. My sobriety date, September 1st of 09. AA has saved my life and gave me a life. Last May of 09, I had a year and 3 months, and I had one out, and I got sober in 96, and I've been in and out, doing it my way. And in May, when I went out, I couldn't get sober for nothing. Usually, if I went out, when I got back to AA, I'd get, you know, a year or two. And this time, I couldn't get sober for nothing, and I struggled for the first time in my life. They talk about the progression of alcoholism. I thought about taking my own life. I had thoughts of that. So my buddy here, Steve, one of my best friends, he's celebrating 22 years tomorrow. He did everything he could to help me. Whew. And he said, I think I got somebody that could help you. So he took me to a guy named Dave Wagner. He's got 18 years. And he has a meeting at his house on Saturday evenings. And after the meeting, I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said he would, but most people don't make it. He's real hardcore. And when I got back this time, I was ready to do what you guys suggested because I knew I smelled death. So I met every day at his house, every evening. I can't remember for sure. I think for about 3 weeks every day. And the first day we went in his office and he held the big book in his hand. He said, if you just do what's suggested in this big book, the obsession will be lifted. It just happens. And looking back, all the other times I was really trying to get this thing. The only thing I did this time was show up and do what was suggested, and the obsession was lifted. And after I had 30 days, he says, now go find a sponsee. And I thought, what, you know? And so I did, and I have two sponsees today. And I sat down with them and just do what Dave did with me, go through the big book. And if I have any questions, I call Dave. And I owe my life to this program, and thanks for saving my life.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Fountain Hills, Arizona, originally Boston, if you can't tell. My sobriety date is March 16th, 1980. Through the grace of God, I haven't had to pick up a drink or a drug in over 30 years, which is an absolute miracle. Truly grateful for this program and the life it's given me. My dad and my mom were sober when I was still drinking, and I came to see my dad get his 15th year cake, and I haven't drank since. And through the grace of God in this program and the wonderful sponsorship I've had over the years, and today I am truly, truly grateful for all the old-timers that were there for me. You know, I was 24 years old, a sick kid, you know, with a little punk rock haircut and the heels like this. And they used to tell me, sit down, shut up, and listen, and stop clicking those heels around, you know. And, man, good old days, you know. And I did what they told me to do, you know. I worked the steps in my life. And today I do exactly the same thing today that I did when I first got here. They told me to get on my knees and ask God every day to keep me away from a drink and a drug. You know, and ask God to remove the desire, because I still had the desire to drink. And this old timer grabbed me and said, you know, are you asking God to remove the desire? I said, no. He said, try it. So I tried it, and I haven't had the desire to drink since. And truly the grace of God. I wanted to share a quick story with you. When they said it was on the 12th step, and recently I started sponsoring a wonderful gift, this woman named Hiker, and she's had a rough, rough time, you know, 10 years of banging her head in against the wall and broken collarbones and broken, you know, jaws, the whole bit. Anyway, she's getting sober, and she's 9 months sober, and I picked her up as a sponsee about 3 months ago. Well, she adopted this little dog, this little chihuahua, a year ago that wouldn't come out of the crate. She hasn't been able to hold it. About a month ago, me and my husband went away, and she watched my little dog for me. That little dog is watching my dog and is now barking, running around, eating food, going outside, the whole bit. And Heike goes to the meetings and tells everybody about her sponsor and her dog's sponsor. And You know how they say, take a look at the people in your life. Ask the people in your life if you're getting sober, or look at the family, or ask the wife, or whatever. Or take a look at their dogs, too. You know, it's amazing. But I just wanted to share that. I hope everybody has a great weekend, and thanks again for being here.
Hi, my name's Chip, and I'm an alcoholic. It's through God's grace, a little bit of willingness, and folks like you that I stand in front of you today. I guess the topic is working with others. I can tell you, for me, the first 11 steps were an intellectual exercise that I did on paper, similar to writing an English term paper on something that I really didn't care about, I really didn't want to do, and I really didn't need. I think 99% of my program was working with others and having an experience, experiencing recovery through you. Because until I sat across from a table, when I heard someone tell me that when they were 11, they were at summer camp and they were afraid of the dark or something. They didn't like being away from home. Can't remember what it was. They crawled into the bed with their friend and were ridiculed for it. And every summer he came back, he was ridiculed for it as that kid who was afraid of the dark. And he sat across from me at the table, and to see a grown man weep was a very powerful experience for me. He said, "I did it because I was afraid." And then it came to me, and I, as if God was speaking directly through me, I said, "We're all afraid." And that was my first experience with me. I would say for you, this is a selfish program. Be selfish enough to work all 11 steps as quickly as you're willing to do. Work with someone else and let your recovery begin. If I had it all to do again, I would do like some of you have alluded to and doing the steps in a couple months and begin working with others. That was not my experience. When I got to AA, they said, get a book. Read the book. Get a sponsor. Call your sponsor. Work the steps. Pray and help others. It took me 5 years to do that. And I wanted to quit drinking. You know, it tells us in the big book, it says, we are like men and women who've lost their legs. Alcohol is a delusion. We can't tell the truth from the false. What I think I need or wanted or ought to do is what got me here. They said, my best ideas got me here. Your best ideas keeps me here and keeps me sober. I tell you how God works through me and speaks directly to me. It's sitting across the table from you, sharing my experience with you, and you sharing yours with me. I'm going to tell you what I heard the first time I was in AA, that if you don't love AA, you're missing out on something. That's my experience today. I love AA. I'm grateful for every experience that you've blessed me to have. I'm grateful for all of you. And I'm grateful for all those who came before me, so I can be part of this wonderful fellowship and helping me help myself get well, one day at a time, by helping you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Norma Jean from San Diego. I'm an alcoholic. My husband is an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic, and I'm the mother of three alcoholic sons. I want to tell you a story about how this program works in relation to the 12 steps. 4 years ago, on July 8th, my husband hit a pothole. He was on a bike. He flew 45 feet through the air and landed on his head. He broke his neck. When he got to the hospital, he was paralyzed from the neck down. He had a doctor that said, we'll stabilize your neck with surgery. So the next morning, at 3 o'clock that morning, our daughter had brought one of his reading books, the 24-hour day book, to the hospital. And he said, I can't sleep. Would you read me from that book? So I read the July 8th, and he said, no, Today is July 9th. Look, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I want you to read that page for me. So I did. And down at the bottom of the page, the 24-hour day book, it says, I pray that I will not be paralyzed. He said, that's not in there. I said, yes, it is. He said, show me. So I took the book and I put it right here by his nose. And he says, it's too close. I can't see it. So I held it out here and I read it to him again. And he read it. The next morning when he went to surgery, he was smiling. He was transferred from that acute hospital to a rehab hospital where every 4 days a week, 4 days out of seven, AA brought AA meetings to him. He first started coming out to them wheeled in a wheelchair. He started coming out to them walking in a walker. And he finally finished coming out to them out in the patio walking by himself. Those guys and ladies saved his life. That is 12-step work put in action. And he knows that they're there for him, and they have always been there for him. But it was the most amazing thing to watch them come to the hospital with a meeting, 20, 30 men and women. Thank you for saving his life.
I'm Tara. I'm an alcoholic. And I got sober in Tempe, Arizona, August of 2003. I got fired for fraud. I had no idea what I was doing was illegal or morally wrong. And I went to my first meeting on August 19th. And there was a little guy standing out front of this club in Tempe. And he looked like somebody took him right out of Brooklyn in the 50s and stuck him in front of this club. And he made it his mission to make sure that every newcomer got a handshake and a hug, no matter what. And just that fact, you know, just that he walked up to me and gave me a hug, that meant so much, because I felt broken and alone, and like there was something wrong with me. And he taught me that I was worth something. And I get to share that with other people because of him. And I wanted more than anything to be able to give that back. You know, I wanted more than anything to look him in the face and say thank you, but I wasn't capable of doing it. And I, you know, I got that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization as he walked away. But there was another person who was there and talked to me, and he just, AA stuff. I couldn't hear any of it. It didn't make any sense, but just him being there. And I came back the next day, and I assumed there was a meeting at 10 o'clock at night, which there wasn't. So I was getting there just as the meeting was ending. And that week there had been a oil pipeline that broke in Tucson. So it was very hard to get gasoline, and this guy had this giant car. And the lines around the gas station were a mile long. I mean, it was hours to get gasoline. And this gentleman drove me 10 miles to get to a meeting. And that's what we do. That's what we do. He could have saved my life for all I know. That everything I have because of that moment. You know, that club became my home group, and they taught me what it means to be a decent human being. They had potlucks at each other's houses, and they taught me how to watch football sober. They taught me, something we do in Phoenix is a lot of home groups will take the 24-hour hotline as a home group. We'll have it for 12 hours, and we have potlucks. And that's how I learned how to do 12-step calls. You know, 20 people watching movies, we put it on pause when the phone rings, you know. And that's the most important person in the room is the person on the phone with the newcomer. And half the time they're blitzed out of their mind, but it's beautiful and it's powerful. And, you know, every once in a while there's just these amazing things that happen. And I get to see them because I'm a part of a fellowship. And that the most important thing in my life is not what I am, it's what I give to others. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Frank. I'm definitely an alcoholic. I am from White Plains, New York. Grew up there. Well, I got older there. I'm growing up in these rooms now. I got to these rooms in 96. My sobriety date is 12/15/03. I hung around these rooms for a little while in 96 to about 99, and I was in that Frank Sinatra program, My Way. You know, as we try and do things our way, you know, when we come in here, and somebody had mentioned that. But when I got back, and you know, my wife had the desire for me to stop drinking. That's why I got back here. You know, and I'm so glad I'm back here. I was in Toronto, you know, the last time, and it was fantastic. But today, I need to give of myself. It's not the things that I have that I can give. That's what I thought that was important. Today, it's giving of myself. And that's what the 12 steps do for me, learning how to give of myself, you know, and not be selfish and keep everything that I get from this program. I have to give it back. Because if I don't, I'm going to go back out again. And today, I still have that fear in my life of picking up another drink. You know, I'm scared to death of picking up another drink. And I'm almost, you know, 6.5 years back, you know, and I still have the fear. You know, but I got to do these things. I heard this gentleman get up here before, and he's saying, you know, he just got up here just, you know, just to share. I'm scared to death right now of sharing. I'm shaking, you know. I wanted to see what it was like to share in front of 2,000 people, but there's only about maybe 70 left. But that's okay. Yeah. But I need to do things like this. I need to fight through the fear that I have. I'm always scared of what people are going to think of me, you know, and I need to continue to fight through that, you know, and I don't know. I love being in here, and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams because I go to AA meetings. Thank you.
I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic from Palm Springs, California. Yay. My sobriety date is September 3rd, 1976, and my home group is Perez Plaza in Cathedral City. And I was thinking, sitting back there, about service, and I was realizing the people standing in the line over here wanting to share, and that's a form of service. The possibility of service is just never ending. So I thought I better get up here and do this. Even though I am very special, and I am convinced that you won't accept me because I'm different. So, and especially when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous the first day, which was September 3rd, 1976 in San Francisco, I would be the only college graduate, the only gay person, the only sophisticated person, and all that. A few years later, I had a sponsee who was very shy, and he worked on the Living Sober Conference in San Francisco. And that year, there were 5,000 gay and lesbian alcoholics. And because he worked on the program committee, they asked him to come up and read the promises. And he was very shy, and so he didn't want to do it. And so I wanted to do it. So I came up in the front. There were 5,000 gay and lesbian alcoholics and lights in the San Francisco Civic Auditorium. And I said, "My name is Bob, I'm an alcoholic," and these 5,000 people said back, "Hi, Bob." That is profound. I felt like I had taken drugs or something. That was a moment of real joy, and that was in the 80s. I will never forget it. The whole thing of belonging, and I do belong, and I still lapse into my, like, I'm so special. In fact, my fellowship, Perez Plaza, has hardly any gay meetings, or any gay people other than me and a couple of others, and I go there because it's closest to my house, and this program has given me a busy life, and I learned that this is really a wonderful group of people, so I came here to San Antonio with the people, but I never stop reminding them that I'm special and different. And they better remember it. Thanks a lot.
Hi, my name's Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. My wife's telling me I have to be couth. My home group is La Jolla Soledad Men's in San Diego, California. My sobriety date is December 20th, 1997. I got kicked out of rehab in 1996 in February for talking to a girl there, and she got kicked out too, so I married her. And And so we're 14 years later, we're here with our boys who are 9 and 6, and never and it's your fault, you know? That they've never seen us take a drink. I remember I had about 90 days sober, and I went to this this group called the Mesa Men's, and I heard a guy share about visiting his son in prison, and I wanted what he had, and but I was too afraid to go up and ask him to be my sponsor. And then a couple weeks later, I was at Soledad Men's, and they said that they were having this retreat up in Julian, and like 30 guys were going to go up there, and I was new and scared, but I thought this was a way I could get to know 30 guys so I'd feel more comfortable going to the meeting. And I went to that retreat, and I saw that guy. And I said, you know, would you sponsor me? And he said, yeah, I'd be glad to. And I said, thank you. You know, the reason I asked you was I saw you at La Mesa Men's talking about visiting your son in prison. He said, that's amazing, because I don't go to La Mesa Men's, and I don't have a son who's in prison. I asked the wrong guy. And he's still my sponsor 13 years later. And for me, that's kind of how my life worked. I found everything I ever wanted in Alcoholics Anonymous. My wife is the woman I got kicked out of rehab with, and my sponsor is the wrong guy. And you know, thank God, you know, because it's far better than I could have created for myself. Last story, when we're in the delivery room with our first child, and it took the anesthesiologist 6 entry points to get the epidural into my wife's spine. I had this resentment against the anesthesiologist, who looked like Magnum P.I., and my solution would be to rip his mustache off. Eventually he got the epidural in, and my wife was knocked out, and I called my sponsor, and I'm like, I want to kill this this anesthesiologist. And so he came down to the delivery room, and we went into the waiting room, and we prayed for the anesthesiologist, so that I could be free of my resentment, and I could go back, and I could be present for the birth of our son, and to be free, so I could be there. And I didn't know you guys did that. I just thought you helped us not drink, but you teach us how to live, and you know, thank you so much for that.
I'm Michael. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is December 26, 1972. And I'm up here today because I want to say thank you to the kinds of unsung service things that happen all the time. You know, a lot of us have stories where we know the person, or we remember the person, or we kept going to the same meeting with the person who took us to our first meeting, or talked to us at our first meeting, or who carried us through those first months. I got sober to rehab, where I was pretty much against my will. And there were two people there who completely changed my life and who I've never seen again, and don't ever expect to see in the fellowship. I was 20 years old. I was a pretty raggedy-looking hippie, and my whole way of thinking about the world was I was different. Somebody else just said that all about the defiance of whatever that meant to me. And I remember so vividly this. I hadn't decided yet. They were supposedly giving me a choice about doing the short-term program, which was detox, and the long-term program, which was the 28 days. And I was still thinking about whether I would do the 28 days. And there was this young man who showed up in the commons area who would just chat with people. He was from AA, and he would just chat with people. And I remember so vividly sitting with him and him saying, you know, you don't have to be like all of these people if you decide you want to stick around. You really don't. You don't have to have the two kids and the white picket fence and the house in the suburbs and the two-car garage and the job and all. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You just have to not drink and go to meetings. And that lodged inside of me enough somewhere that I was willing to say, okay, I'll try out this 28-day thing, because I knew for a long time that I'd been not wanting to drink and somehow not succeeding. So I went to the 28-day program, and every Friday they had this special meeting where family members would come in and employers and EAP people, and there was this one old Chicago cop who would come, retired Chicago police officer. I was getting sober in Chicago, and he'd sit in the room and he'd share, and he'd been sober at AA a long time. Now, I got nothing in my mind in common with this man. He's a representative of authority that I hate. He's, you know, old, but clean cut and responsible looking and all, and works, and he's a cop. And I don't remember a single word he said. I do not remember a single word he said. But if he hadn't been in those meetings, I wouldn't be standing here. There was something about him. There was something about whatever it was he had or whatever it was he said or whatever emanated from him that got me here today. And I've been thinking a lot about these two guys who never saw him again, never had a chance to say thank you to them, so I'm saying thank you to you as a proxy for them. Because so many of us do the service, those little service things that you know, we really try to, I try to remember that it's all about, I'm doing it for me to stay sober, right? That's why I'm taking that guy to a meeting. That's why I'm answering the phones at Central Service in Boston. That's why I do area committee stuff when I was doing that stuff. That's why I got involved in Nikki Powell when I did that stuff. It was all about trying to stay sober a day at a time. But all those ripples, all those little things we've done and we continue to do are why I'm here today. And so I wanted to say thank you to those guys whose names I don't even know. And I guess in a sense say thank you to all of you for continuing to do those same little things. Because I think that's often where it really is. It's in those quiet little things that the difference gets made. So thank you for my sobriety.